The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
We are here with the Alternative Oscars, better known as the Brodies, named for Richard Brody, who writes about film for The New Yorker. And I'm also here with Alexandra Schwartz, who writes about damn near everything for The New Yorker, books, theater, politics, and what have you. And Richard, I've got to ask you, what's going to win the lowly real Oscars, do you think, just to start?
I think that Roma's going to win.
And you're anti-Roma.
I'm not a big fan of Roma. I think that Roma has its own problems of aesthetics and of politics.
The political problem that you see with it is that, in a sense, that the main character, the cleaning woman, the nanny, doesn't have a voice.
Doesn't have a voice, exactly.
We don't know her past.
We don't even know her real relationship with the children in the house.
But at least, Richard, you could say that it's an auteurist movie and you love auteurs.
Well, not necessarily. You know, there's that great line from André Bazin, auteur, yes, but of what?
Touché.
There we go. We're off to the races. Richard, let's just go through your nominees for Best Picture. You have a couple of them are pretty well known. And some of them aren't. So just go through them.
One of the ones that's well known is Sorry to Bother You, Boots Riley's first feature about a young man, a young black man in Oakland, played by Lakeith Stanfield, who is working as a telemarketer and is encouraged by a colleague, played by Danny Glover, to put on his white voice in order to succeed.
Hey, young blood, let me give you a tip. Use your white voice.
Man, I ain't got no white voice.
Oh, come on, you know what I mean. You have a white voice in there, you can use it. It's like when you're pulled over by the police.
Oh, no, I just use my regular voice when that happens. I just say, back the fuck up off the car and don't nobody get hurt.
All right, man, I'm just trying to give you some game. You want to make some money here? Then read the script with a white voice.
And it's a movie about class as much as it is about race, isn't it?
It's about class. It's about politics. It's about labor politics. It's essentially an apocalyptic revolutionary film.
Okay. Second nominee?
Second nominee, Black Klansman, Spike Lee's historical drama and at the same time sort of historical fantasy about the combating of the KKK in a Colorado police precinct by a white and a black officer.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
Well, I've established contact and created some familiarity with the Klansman over the phone. I'll continue in that role, but I'll need another officer. Surprise, surprise, a white officer to play me when they meet face to face.
That's my point exactly.
Chief, black Ron Stallworth over the phone, white Ron Stallworth face to face, so there becomes a combined Ron Stallworth.
Can you do that?
I believe we can. With the right white man, we can do anything.
It's an outrage that Spike Lee has never been nominated for a directing Oscar before.
Now, how do you think Spike Lee will make out, and what was your view of Black Klansman?
It's weirdly hopeful retroactively. And at the same time, it's a history lesson. There's a tremendous amount of cultural context in Black Klansman. It's, in effect, a movie that takes the cultural background and pulls it into the foreground.
And brings it up to the present. I mean, one of the things that I think about most often with Black Klansman was the kind of use that Spike Lee made of footage that all of us have watched on TV, you know, of Charlottesville and I think in other events, and how emotional and freshly terrible it felt to watch that kind of footage that we've all seen but recontextualized.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the film that I think it really is the Brody film of the year is, and I can't do a drum roll. There we go.
Madeline's Madeline, Josephine Decker's film. Madeline's Madeline is a very classic and somewhat classical coming-of-age story. The story of a high school student in New York who is both a theater prodigy and who is suffering from mental illness. And also who, like all teenagers, is in a very stressful relationship with her mother, played by Miranda July. But what's so exciting about this film is that Helena Howard, who was a teenager at the time she made the film, gives what I consider one of the greatest teen performances in the history of cinema. There's one scene, an improv exercise in her theater troupe, where she's impersonating her own mom, and you see some of the raw fury she feels toward her mother coming out in that scene.
When you were just a little baby, I stroked your head so soft. I said to myself, I said, this baby, she's so perfect. She's gonna be so strong. And look at you now. You are sick. You're so sick.
So Madeline's Madeline is sweeping Best Picture and Best Director and Best Actress in the Brodies. Now we come to Best Actor, Richard. And this, I think, is going to surprise a few people.
I thought that Robert Redford's performance in The Old Man and the Gun, a movie with a New Yorker connection because it's based on a story by David Grann that originally ran in The New Yorker, is the most extraordinary performance I saw from a man this year.
Right. And it's about a guy who, in the beginning of the film, you think he's just a charming rogue and he robs banks, but he doesn't hurt anybody and he doesn't really mean it. What you realize after a while is he's a sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
He can't live without knocking over banks.
Mm-hmm.
This place is not my style. But say it was a bank. And instead of that counter up there, that was really a teller's window. And that lady standing there was the teller behind the window. And you just walk in real calm. And you find yourself a spot and you sit down. Just like we're sitting here. And you wait and you watch. And that may take a couple of hours, might take a couple of days even. But you wait. It's got to feel right. The timing has to feel right. And when it does feel right, you make your move. So you walk right up, look her in the eye, and you say, ma'am, this is a robbery. And you show her the gun like this.
Redford does something here that I've never seen him do before. It's a performance of tremendous intimacy. Every tremor of his eyebrows, every half smile on his lips, every wink, every gleam is picked up by the camera and seems to convey a lifetime of experience and slyness.
And now we're going to talk about the real Oscars for a moment. So we come to two films that seem to dominate the nominations. You've got Roma and The Favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I already expressed my admiration for Roma. I really love The Favorite, and I thought it was incredibly funny, and I had no reason to know this film was going to be what it was, having seen that director's predecessors, which are The Lobster.
The Lobster.
Right. And that movie
with a deer.
Killing a deer.
Killing a sacred deer.
I thought The Favorite was incredibly funny and interesting. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it. And, you know, I was not a fan of The Lobster, which I felt to be too... Yes, the face that you're making, David, conveys my feelings about it as well. I felt that it was too solipsistically invested in its own conceits. But The Favorite was something really different and fresh, and it is about Queen Anne, who in the movie is played by Olivia Colman, who is wrapped up in sort of governing England as it is at war, but more in her own personal affairs. She has 17 rabbits in cages kept in her bedroom. And she, her lover, is played by Rachel Weisz in a fantastic performance who guides her and uses her erotic influence to get political favors accomplished. And her standing at court is compromised when Emma Stone is a sort of tumbleweed figure arrives, falls out of a carriage into the mud and arrives and screws everything up.
You have become close to Abigail.
She's been a dear, yes.
It is such a shame, but I've had to dismiss her for theft. She's a liar and a thief. Your tongue seems uncharacteristically still.
I heard you. She's my servant. She's not dismissed. I've made her my maid of the bedchamber.
Did you not hear what I said?
Yes, you regard her as a liar and a thief.
Yes.
I do not, obviously.
Alex and Richard, if you look at the sort of sum total of the nominees this year, are the Oscars doing better? Are they doing worse? Or is it just kind of the same old, same old?
Well, two things that come to my mind looking at the nominees are, one, I am perpetually disappointed by how few women directors are nominated. I mean, first of all, it's a major imbalance in the industry in general. But this year, there were definitely contenders, and there was no reason to have this total shutout once again. So it's disappointing to me, and it brings the Academy's credibility down in my eyes, not simply for some kind of gender ratio ideal, but really for, you know,
gender ratio at all.
Yeah, at all. And just appreciating quality when it's there. It's hard for me to believe that if a movie like Can You Ever Forgive Me had been made by a man, that it would not be nominated.
I think you're going to make another point, though, Alex.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say is the enemy is inside the house. You have Netflix. It has arrived. Roma is nominated up the wazoo for all these awards. The Oscars have had to deal with increasing competition from TV, from people, you know, sitting at home and flicking it on. It's interesting to me that Netflix is now going to be sitting inside that ceremony and has every reason to have a pretty smug look on, you know, its face.
Is there anything wrong with that?
I don't think there is, actually. I mean, independent producers have been rivaling Hollywood studios for years. In fact, this is one of the reasons why the ceremonies have been transformed in recent years.
Right.
For quite a while, studio films have more or less been shut out of the Oscars, at least the Best Picture Awards, because independent producers were coming in and producing the higher quality films that were then getting nominated. See, I think the Oscars' mistake is actually to broadcast itself at all. It ought to be a movie. You know, Martin Scorsese ought to direct the Oscars the way he directed The Last Waltz, and then it ought to be shown in theaters a certain amount of time later.
That's a pretty great idea.
That's a great idea, but I think Martin Scorsese's view of the Oscars after Raging Bull lost to Ordinary People, something I still haven't gotten over quite, too jaundiced for him to carry that off year after year. So I'm guessing, by the way, A Star is Born was not your favorite for the year.
You know who was originally supposed to direct A Star is Born? That was going to be directed by Eastwood. Beyonce was going to have the Lady Gaga.
Exactly.
Role.
I think you once told me, Richard, Clint Eastwood could put two sticks and rub them together and it would be a great movie.
Richard, Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
You can read Richard Brody on film at NewYorker.com all the time. And Alexandra Schwartz is a staff writer.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.